Okay, welcome to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. I am recording this live from my home in Austin, Texas. So if anyone's watching the video, you can see a little bit of this backdrop. I'm very excited in these challenging times to continue to be able to bring on really just amazing nonprofit leaders, organizations, and people that we work with that are tackling this crisis of COVID-19 head on. Running their organizations and also are just doing amazing things as part of their mission. So without further ado, our guest today is Matt Prindeville, the Imagineer and CEO at Upstream. Matt, thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Stephen. It's great to be here with you.
You know, as I was getting geared up for this, I was looking on, obviously on your website, as I'm always trying to do a little bit of research specifically about kind of the person, the guest coming on, their background and bio. And it's pretty unbelievable. So I'm going to rattle off first for the group so they kind of understand the presence that we're in. But, you know, Matt is a recognized thought leader within the plastic pollution community. He advises the United Nations Environment Program on plastic pollution strategies. He's one of the founders of Break Free. He is which is a plastic movement, and the founder of Cradle to Coalition and Make It, Take It campaign. I think I rattled through those and I might have screwed up a few things. So let me punt it back over to you.
You're doing fine.
Yeah, no, you're here. You know, Matt, can you tell us a little bit about just kind of your background and how you got involved with all of this and some of your, you know, your past experiences?
Yeah, sure. So, I was not somebody who grew up with a strong environmental ethic. You know, I think my dad was an outdoorsman, and so we did a lot of stuff outdoors, but it wasn't like worrying about the environment or trying to solve the environment was a big part of my upbringing. But that all changed when I went to college, and I took this seminar class when I was a freshman in college, and we read a book called The Ecology of Commerce. Some of you guys that are listening might know that book. It's written by a guy named Paul Hawken back in the early 90s. And, you know, it was the first time that I got introduced to this idea called extended producer responsibility. Basically, that companies should be responsible for ensuring that their products are designed with safe, sustainable materials, and that they're helping to create the infrastructure to get their products back and turn them into something useful when people are done with it. And it really kind of blew my mind, right? Because, you know, I started to think about just all of the environmental problems that I was being exposed to in my freshman year of college. I had my girlfriend was at the time, she was a serious environmental activist, and all of my friends seemed to be, you know, involved in political causes and environmental causes. And so I quickly learned a lot. And I didn't know that this idea that I learned about in this freshman seminar class would really become my life's work. But I eventually graduated from college. I went to go work for an environmental nonprofit group that focused mostly on policy. And on my first day on the job, I was asked to help organize a news conference. And we were doing a news conference on a bill that was going to require computer and television manufacturers to set up collection and recycling programs for their products. And so this was the exact same idea that I had studied about, you know, in that freshman seminar class. And I have to say that I just got so turned on by it. And over the years, I've been able to you know, work with other nonprofit groups, to work with local government officials, to work with elected officials, to work with musicians and artists, you know, really around this idea that we need to be designing systems where products are designed with the end in mind, and that we're creating the kinds of systems that can get consumer products and get packaging back and do something useful with it, so that, you know, we really have a sustainable circular economy. And that's really been, you know, the last 20 years of my life has been around helping to build and support movements to do just that.
I think it's incredible. You know, first and foremost, thank you for what you're doing. We were talking before we hit the record button a little bit about just my work and my passion at Charity Charge and a lot of this podcast, but a lot of it was born out of the fact that you know, we've now been running our programs for almost 4 years, and in the space of that, directly funded and supported over 950 nonprofits. And so a lot of this podcast started because the phone would ring every day, and it would be leaders or people, you know, working at different organizations that would call up to set up an account with us at Charity Charge. And I would naturally ask them about what they did, you know, and so it's like every day I just kept learning about more and more organizations. And so I say to you, thank you. And it's really been my passion and really the joy every day of just being able to engage with really positive people like yourself that are truly doing things to change the world and make a difference. And so I want to acknowledge that. I think that's important that we do that more and more. And I have a huge passion for the environmental movement. You know, when I was in high school, our high school at the time did not recycle. And I created a program where we would collect all the cardboard and set up basically a relationship with, I don't want to call them a waste management company, but a company that, you know, specialized in the kind of hauling paper products and cardboard and such. So, Sure. Yeah. So you know, we're aligned there. And, you know, I give a huge shout out to, you know, one of our big friends is Kate Williams, not too far from you, on that side of the East Coast, at 1% for the planet. So huge passion for what you guys are doing. Awesome. Tell us now, as we go into it a little bit more, tell us specifically about Upstream and some of the specific initiatives that you all are focused on.
Yeah, absolutely. So at Upstream, we spark innovative solutions to plastic pollution. But for us, the problem, it's not just plastic. It's really the throwaway culture that's at the root of plastic pollution and a whole host of other problems. And so, you know, we're working to build a movement to make throwaway go away. And we have three core areas that we work in. One is through our business innovation project, where we work to transform large scale iconic venues to help them make the transition out of single use and to reuse. Secondly, we have our policy project, where we're working to create essentially throwaway free communities, where we've developed an ordinance that makes it so that when you sit down to eat at a restaurant, they're going to serve you on real plates and real cups and real cutlery. And it also helps, this ordinance helps pave the way for businesses to come in and provide those same kinds of reusable services for to go. So if you were to walk into a coffee shop and you forgot your reusable mug, you could rent one for $1. And later on that day, you're at a, you know, different coffee shop, a different part of the city, you get your next coffee to go in a clean mug, you give them the dirty mug, you've already paid that deposit, and all the cafes are using the same kind of system. And so, you know, we're, and what we're really excited about with the policy project is that, you know, we've now passed this ordinance in 7 different cities. There's about 1.2 million people that live in communities that are now implementing this and moving in this direction. And we see it as the future. And then our last project is really around, you know, launching culture change campaigns to make this concept of single use history and show that there's a better way than throwaway that's a lot more fun. And so as part of how we do that is we use our podcasts, and we also have a recently launched YouTube video series where we're showcasing and featuring the heroes of the plastic pollution movement, you know, the activists and the entrepreneurs and the kids and the artists that are out there pioneering the better way than throwaway. And we're also in the process of looking at how we can use the power of advertising to get people to question this kind of single-use addiction that we have, and to really start showing that we can move our economy off of single-use and build something better in its place. So that's what we—that's who we are and what we do.
It's really unbelievable, and I want to dive into a few of the things that you mentioned on. I do want to point out that a lot of the things you had mentioned about you know, celebrating the different leaders in this movement, your podcast, also your YouTube channel. Anyone that's listening can find that on, correct me if I'm wrong, but upstreamsolutions.org.
Got it.
Where there's just like a wealth of information on everything that Matt and his team are doing with respect to Upstream. One of the practical things I'm always curious about, you know, back when I had my basically first job out of college, I was working for the University of Texas, and I was working in their clean energy incubator. And as we started to look at a lot of different, I became aware of different clean energy technologies, you'd start to understand that the economics were in the favor. Not only was it a good thing for the environment, but that the economics kind of made sense for the end consumer, the business owner. So, you know, I'm really curious, and I don't know specifically the answer, that's why we're here, but can you walk through some of the programs that you kind of the first and the second initiative that you talked about? Yeah. How does some of these make sense, you know, in the sense of A, imagine that you have someone that's from a local city government that's listening to this that may be interested in adopting this, and or, you know, is a restaurateur or a bar owner or something. How does it ultimately make sense for the bottom line as well?
Great, great question. You know, I think a lot of people that are in food service, especially around fast casual dining and fast food type restaurants and operations, you know, they've been sold this idea that disposable stuff is cheaper than real and reusable. But that's actually not true. And what we have found is that when you make the switch from single-use products to reusable products, if you're doing that on site at your restaurant, the payback is incredibly brief. Like for some businesses, it's a matter of weeks to months. And it's rarely more than a couple of months before those businesses start seeing savings. And that's including if a business has to retrofit and add some extra dishwashing capacity. That's including if there's some additional labor costs in managing the reusables as opposed to just taking out the trash. But when you factor in the costs of inventory management for disposables, plus the solid waste costs, plus having somebody, you know, empty out those trash cans that are filling up for disposable products every half hour, the savings for businesses is real. And my colleague, Miriam Gordon, who works for Upstream, she started a project called Rethink Disposable in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that project has now worked with more than 200 restaurants, including institutional dining like college campuses and corporate campuses. And every single one of those businesses has saved money by making this transition from single use to reuse. And so we feel like we have a good story and a platform to engage not just restaurant owners and restaurant chains, but also to engage large scale venues. So, you know, when you think about how much, you know, a stadium owner might spend on disposable beer cups over the course of a season, or how much like a cafeteria at an aquarium or a zoo or at a museum might spend on all these disposable products when they could be saving money and protecting the environment at the same time by making this switch. So we get to sell not just an environmental message, like it's not just do the right thing, it's do the right thing and, oh, by the way, you can save money.
Wow. I mean, that's where I think the whole thing becomes, you know, super compelling. I think it's important. You guys, obviously, you did a great answer there in articulating that. But that's where I think all of these things really come to a head where the rubber meets the road and it can start to make sense of having some real change. You know, speaking of change, there's a lot, obviously, going on as we record this with respect to COVID-19, unbelievable, just unprecedented challenges. We obviously, you know, work directly with so many organizations, hundreds and hundreds nationally across the country. And I really want to continue to use this medium that we have of this podcast to share tips, strategies, inspiration, wisdom, hope, whatever it may be. So I'm just curious, I do know on a really practical point, that as it relates to your mission on your most recent podcast, you had Jane Monk from the Food Packaging Forum on. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you and your team learned from her and just kind of how COVID-19 is directly or indirectly related to your missions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and first of all, our hearts go out to everybody that's listening that's really struggling during this time. I mean, I think this is obviously unprecedented for anyone living today. We just haven't walked through, we haven't been exposed to a global tragedy of this nature. And I think we're still, like, this is April 1st, right? This is being recorded. We're still coming to terms with the impact that this is having, you know, on people's lives all around the world and on businesses all around the world. And of course, you know, as we look at our work, you know, the priorities right now are in taking care of people. You know, it's like making sure that everybody is safe, that they have food and water and toilet paper, and that they're, you know, that they're being engaged in ways that aren't just about, you know, being afraid, right? It's really about helping to support our constituencies, our communities, and people around the world in helping to cope with what's going on. So that's priority number one. And we've been kind of brought into a conversation around this in part because the plastics industry right now is exploiting this crisis to scare people away from using things like their reusable shopping bags or using their reusable cups for coffee. And they're attempting literally right now to roll back all of these community bans and even state level bans on single use plastics, like single use plastic bags and styrofoam containers and things like that. So I gotta say, we were surprised at how quickly they moved to exploit this crisis. And so we've had to be responsive to that and actually, you know, combat a lot of the misinformation that's being spread by the plastics industry to put, you know, profit over people. And so, you know, some of the messages that we're telling our friends out there and anybody that will listen is that, you know, washing your reusable bags and using them, same with your cups, that's about as safe as you can possibly get, right? Because you know exactly where those products, you know, where your bags have been, where your cup has been. You're not worried about, you know, who else is touching it along the way. You know, that's completely safe, and we want to encourage people to continue to do that. You know, for the business owners, you know, we want them to understand that, you know, the most important thing is ensuring that all of these messages that we're hearing are getting out there. And I was in the grocery store today, and you're seeing it, hearing it all over the, you know, the radio at the grocery store. They're saying, you know, make sure to wash your hands, keep 6 feet apart from each other, you know, be respectful when you're in line. We're sanitizing everything. You know, we are needing to respond to this moment. And part of that means responding to the dangers of this virus living on surfaces. And we know now that the recent research by the Center for Disease Control shows that the virus can live on some surfaces for quite a bit of time. It can live on plastic and single-use plastics for up to 3 days. And so some of the things that we're also telling our friends is, you know, be mindful when you're handling plastics from the grocery store, single-use plastics. You know, consider disinfecting them, wiping them down. That's what we're doing at our own house right now. And also, more importantly, you know, we really want to see like that the future isn't, you know, it's not just going to be about people remembering to bring their own bags and their own cups and their own bottles everywhere. We actually really want the businesses themselves that are selling us coffee, that are selling meals to go for takeout, to help be providing these reuse services so that we can actually get the products that we want without generating all the waste in the first place. And I think, you know, one of the trends that we're seeing, which we're concerned about, is rightly so, people are ordering groceries delivered and they're ordering lots of takeout food to their homes and apartments. And this is really providing a great opportunity for restaurants to stay alive during this time of crisis. But unfortunately, the model with how those products are being delivered is a single-use disposable model, right? And so we're being forced now to deal with all kinds of disposable products at a time when recycling systems are also being put on the pause button. We're seeing even states that have bottle deposit law, container deposit laws, bottle bills, those things are being paused right now. So rightly so, businesses are trying to do everything they can and politicians are trying to do everything they can to keep people safe. But we don't, it's exposed the fact that we don't have the systems in place to really get people what they want, including getting people what they want in a time of crisis, in ways that don't generate, you know, incredible amounts of waste and incredible amounts of single-use plastics.
It's unbelievable. I mean, really, as you talk about all that, I think that that's why I appreciate so much what you're doing, and just honestly getting to know you, and just even in this intimate kind of way, just in this one-on-one conversation between us that hopefully so many other people will learn from. It's relatable so much to specifically your mission and this plastic pollution strategies that you're talking about. But I also think it's, hopefully this is giving people some perspective to, I don't want to say question everything, but the same thing that's happening to the plastics industry, I'm sure is happening to a lot of other industries that we don't realize, even in a time of crisis like this.
Well, you probably saw that the Trump administration, I don't mean to get political here because I'm not trying to do that at all, but the Trump administration has now relaxed environmental regulations across the board for a whole series of industries that they're calling essential industries. They're basically saying they don't have to report when they release toxic pollution, either intentionally or by accident, anymore while this crisis is going on. And, you know, it's, having worked on environmental legislation for 20 years, including a number of federal laws, I mean, it's unconscionable to me that polluting industries would again exploit a crisis to get left off the hook for complying with environmental regulations that help keep us all safe. I got to say that we shouldn't be surprised, because there, all often when there are crises or disasters, you've got disaster capitalists that are coming in and exploiting the matter for their own benefit. But I was really surprised at how quickly some of this happened, like literally in the matter of weeks that, we've seen some of these things happen. And I know this is a new time that we're in, and everybody's trying to make sense of it. And I don't envy the policymakers that are really trying to come together to make really tough decisions right now. But at the same time, we don't want to just trade the coronavirus crisis, for the plastic pollution or the climate crisis, or, we don't want to trade people's lives fighting for coronavirus for people's lives that are fighting in fence line communities near these polluting facilities. And so that's a really, important message that we're wanting people to contend with as well.
I'm really glad that you said that, for a couple of reasons. We just had a whole kind of team huddle, all hands at Charity Charge, about what can we do more of? What can we continue to do? And we were thinking a lot about, and I said to the team, as much as I wish that, I've seen some specials of different companies. For example, I saw one yesterday that in Austin that, their core business is, making window tints and replacing like car windows and things of that sort. And they've repurposed all of their employees to make these kind of like helmets or shields for hospital and like healthcare workers in Austin, which is incredible.
Amazing.
Which is incredible. But I think every company and nonprofit has to ask themselves two questions. So I'm going to give my opinion on it and curious yours, because I think it's where it's going, which is, there are ways right now that we can all make a difference. I think what's key is that you assess, does it, may be that your core mission of the product or the service that your nonprofit or your business provides is actually ever more relevant in a time like this. So in part for us, we use, our core product is the Charity Charge business card that Upstream has, where we give out a line of credit to a nonprofit. It's tied only to their 990s. There's no personal credit check. There's no personal guarantee. Nice. There's no annual or per card fees. So in this time evermore, nonprofits need cash flow. They need extra capital. And certainly nobody at an organization wants to take any personal credit risk. So my message a bit back to our team, while we're doing some other ancillary things to try to amplify helping, was, if there's ever a time that we're more relevant, it's right now, where all these organizations are facing, like, they're not raising the same amount of revenue. Certainly, all of those things. So that's why we're doubling down on what we continue to do. And I think a lot of what you're sharing, and this is kind of my message to you and the entire nonprofit community, is that, look, you were set up for a reason and you were founded, if you're running a nonprofit, for a mission to serve. And I think likely now more than ever, that needs to stay true. And you're clearly articulating how you're continuing to fight. So I kind of ranted there, but curious your
perspective. No, it's great.
On everything.
Well, first of all, Stephen, thank you so much for the service that you're providing to nonprofits in a time of need. And I think this is really what all of us are really needing to do, whether you own a business or you run a nonprofit, or you're an administrator for, you know, healthcare facilities or whatever else. Like, we're all being asked to figure out, how do we serve in this moment? And I think, for us, we're looking at the trends that are out there, and we're also looking at our audiences and what they need. And first and foremost, you know, we are working to realign all of our work so that we can effectively serve people in this time of crisis. And for us, what that means is that we know that our core audiences are the local government officials, the nonprofits that we work with, the elected officials, the businesses that are interested in making these transitions to help solve plastic pollution. A lot of those folks are sitting at home right now. And they're also trying to figure out, like, what does this crisis mean for their business, for their work, for their employees? And we're working to understand what their needs are and to develop content that is responsive to those needs. So, for example, the podcast that we did with Jane Monk from the Food Packaging Forum, we were in just direct response to people feeling like, in our community, that they needed to hear from scientists about, you know, the health concerns with disposables, and, you know, how to be safe with reusables, how to be safe at the grocery store when you're ordering packaging, when you're ordering products delivered to your home. And so, you know, we're doing that on the same side with businesses as well. You know, we have a lot of companies that we work with that are they're reuse service providers. So I gave that example earlier of, you know, you walked into a coffee shop and you forgot your reusable mug and you could rent one for $1. Well, there are companies that provide those services for to-go cups, and also companies that provide those services for to-go containers, takeout, and delivery. And so just to give you another example, let's say that, we're all sheltering at home now, right? So some of us might get tired of making beans and rice 5 days in a row and want to support some of these restaurants that are working to stay afloat through prepared food and delivery. Well, right now that's all being done on a disposable model, right? So you get your food delivered in a plastic bag or a paper bag, and it's got, you know, your disposable to-go containers. They might have thrown in some plastic cutlery that you don't need because you're at home. And so imagine, you know, a different model where you would get your takeout food delivered, but it would be in a reusable steel container. And when you were done with it, let's say that you ordered Indian food on Wednesday night and you ordered Chinese food on Friday night. Well, when the delivery driver came to give you your food on Friday night, you could hand them the dirty container from Wednesday, because every restaurant in the area is using that same service. And so what happens is there's a company that comes and takes the dirty containers, takes them to a commercial dishwasher, washes them, and puts them right back out into service. So if I'm a restaurant owner, or if I, you know, I'm the facilities manager for a venue and I'm doing my inventory management, instead of ordering, you know, 1,000 styrofoam clamshell takeout containers, I could now make sure that I have enough reusable takeout containers to serve my whole business for the week or for the month or for whatever else. And I would contract with this other business to provide that service. And so it's a way of getting people what they want without generating all the waste. And of course, Europe is ahead of us on this. There's a lot of these reusable coffee cup services and reusable takeout container services that are coming online throughout Europe. And they're just starting to get a toehold here in the United States. And so we work with a lot of these companies that can essentially be, you know, full-scale service providers for restaurants, for venues, for event spaces, to, you know, get people the food and drinks and products that they want, but do it in ways that don't generate any waste at all.
It's amazing as I'm just thinking about that. And I mean, I'm be honest with you. I mean, I had carry out the other day, 2 days ago from a ramen place, Ramen Tatsuya here. And it was unbelievable the amount of plastic it was in, and it just went out. And you're, I mean, I'm feeling guilty about it, but I want to tell you on a practical note that we should connect, you know, outside of this episode as well, because I feel like, you know, Austin, Texas would be where I'm based and the majority of the Charity Charge team is headquartered, would be so ripe for something like this.
Totally.
You know, and it's about just finding those like-minded cities to continue to go one by one and kind of build a national movement to make this change. So I appreciate that you highlighted on all of that.
Well, the great thing about it is that, you know, we can do this in ways that work with the way that restaurants and food service operations work today. It's not about like drastically retooling them. It's really about, you know, making it easy for restaurants and food delivery services to, again, you know, find ways to get people what they want without generating waste. And the other great news is that, you know, you can also save businesses money by doing this as well. And so, you know, these messages of it's good for the environment, customers like it because they're getting a higher quality experience. You know, it's a lot more fun to just eat out of like a stainless steel reusable container as it is like a styrofoam clamshell container.
Well, I think the irony of the whole thing too is I took the packaging that it was in, and then I put it into a more, an actual, you know, what do you call it? Like the dishware that I have at my home, because I wanted to eat it out of something respectable,
right.
You know?
Right. So, right. That's
so,
right.
I, you know,
that's
they're kind
of thing that happens for most people. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You just take it and dump it into your, if it's at home, you just take it and dump it into a bowl or a plate. Right.
Right. It's so interesting as you say all that. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for sharing all this. I tell to anyone that's listening along, if you want to learn more on all these different initiatives and a lot of the content and campaigns that they have, you can head to upstreamsolutions.org. Matt, is there any other way that people can get involved or any other kind of macro message you want to send?
You know, just from a macro message, I mean, we're, like I said, we're thinking about all of you, and, you know, we know that, especially for, you know, small business owners out there right now, you're trying to figure out how you can weather the storm, for food service, professionals and food service operations. You're trying to figure out like, you know, what's the world going to look like when we're allowed to go back out and start having, you know, a community life again, outside of being, you know, connecting with our friends and family over Zoom and, you know, and our phones. Right. So, I would just say that we think that there are real opportunities to, while kind of the infrastructure, the old infrastructure is down, to start thinking about how we build the infrastructure of tomorrow and also how we build, you know, resilient communities and local economies. I think one of the things this crisis has revealed to us is how reliant we are on these global supply chains for a lot of the things that we need. And, you know, we've got a situation now where we're in the midst of a crisis, and we don't have the masks, the gloves, forget just for the general population. We don't even have enough masks and gloves for the healthcare workers. You know, we don't have the ventilators that we need, right? Because these supply chains are far afield. And, you know, thinking about how do we create resilient local communities and local economic systems. One of the things that I always love, you know, I know I've been talking a lot about these reusable to-go services today, but one of the examples that I like to give is how, you know, a lot of communities are working to ban styrofoam containers for obvious reasons that I don't need to go into. And, you know, but in the course of those public hearings around that, you know, the styrofoam container industry will come in and say, well, you can't ban my product because, you know, I employ a lot of people. There's a lot of jobs. You're going to cost jobs. Well, the reality is that the styrofoam container industry is dominated, you know, by and large by one company. It's a completely vertically integrated supply chain. They've squeezed every human being possible out of that supply chain. And a lot of it's outsourced overseas. It's basically following the global petrochemical and plastics trade, right? But these reusable to-go services, once you've established them, you know, you're employing local people in the, you know, the delivery, in the collection, in the dishwashing, in, you know, in helping to, you know, support, you know, you're building dishwashing factories, you know, you got people that are going out, you know, with bike taxis that are literally collecting, you know, the to-go cups in places like Portland, Oregon. And it becomes part of the fabric of the community. And because food is such, it's emblematic of the way that, you know, humans express their culture. You know, when we get to the point where we figured out the ways to get people what they want without all the waste, then our culture, I think, will have truly embraced sustainability in a whole new way than it has today. So real pleasure to be on the show with you, Stephen. And thanks for
letting me. It's our pleasure to have you. No, and I appreciate your passion. I mean, how fitting for me to say you're leading the charge in this. And I appreciate how you're explaining to us just the interconnectedness of everything. It's really been an honor. So thank you, Matt, for being here. For anyone that's interested in learning more, you can go to upstreamsolutions.org. And I'm just wishing the best of health to everyone that's a part of the Charity Charge community and beyond. Thank you.